Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. It's an interesting thing how we choose the kinds of plants that we grow. Sometimes we make the mistake of saying, "Oh, well, this is grown commercially here, so it must be really good for us." Well, yeah, except that if it's a tomato, well, you know what that means. If it's a tomato, that tomato was grown to be shipped to some kind of weird, crazy place. And it may also require certain types of very precise inputs to get it to produce well. And it may not have great flavor, which it may taste like the kind of restaurant you could buy when you go to, you know, one of those kinds of places. So somebody who has to have a salad tomato and just gives you or a hamburger tomato and they give you the most perfunctory kind of tomato they could possibly give you. Well, that's what commercial tomatoes are for. So sometimes it's not a good idea to do what commercial growers are doing. There's another thing that we sometimes make a mistake about, and this is kind of particular to Mobile, particularly to the Gulf Coast. We say, okay, well, this nursery down the street, this wholesale nursery, and we still have a few wholesale nurseries, is growing this particular plant, so that must mean it's good for me. It must be good for me because this wholesale nursery is growing it. One thing you need to understand about those wholesale nurseries is they're not growing it for you. They're growing it for people in Delaware. They're growing it for people in New Jersey. They're growing it for people in Nashville and Atlanta. They're growing it for people with money, if you don't mind my saying so. They're growing it for people that the demographics are different than they are along the Gulf Coast, where they buy and sell lots of plants. So they grow them here, not because they grow particularly well here, but because when they're young plants and they're in containers, they can get them up to size fairly quickly during our long growing season. But they actually may not, you know, as they age, they may not actually perform real well here. So don't assume that because your wholesale nursery is growing something that it's necessarily good for you. The Mobile Botanical Gardens worked with wholesale growers to select plants that would be good for our climate that they're growing, and to encourage them to grow more of those plants. We're about to lose that kind of relationship for a lot of reasons, but, you know, that's a different thing. But don't assume because a wholesale grower has it that it's going to be good for you. And then I could, if I wanted to, talk about this new thing called heirlooms, which I don't know. You don't know what it means. I don't know what it means. And it means whatever anybody says it means. And an heirloom plant doesn't mean that it's better for you. Doesn't mean it's a better thing for you. Hey, Bruce, I'm listening. What's up?
Trying to weed the garden, and I've got quite a variety of big weeds out there, and I'm just kind of wondering if on some of the rows that I don't want to plant in right now for another month or two, if some of the weeds are really beneficial for the soil, or should I leave some, be selective on my pulling?
Bruce, what a great question. This is a perfect question. You know, I think that's about right. I think you got it. Spring weeds are very interesting weeds. Most of the weeds that you have now are spring weeds. They're weeds that germinate early, that come out early, that cannot tolerate the heat, and they're all going to die. They're all going to die off here in another month. And, you know, they make great mulch. And, in fact, what I've been doing is as I go, I'm pulling up spring weeds left and right in places where I've got things planted or underneath my fruit trees and other things. And I'm taking those spring weeds and I'm using them as mulch around my plants because they break down into soil very quickly and they make pretty rich soil. So, yes, here's what I would do just in case. Just in case, just try to mow them or clip them back. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
About before they go to seed. And that way you won't have, you know, just in case, just probably a good idea. And then, and you actually get the most benefits from those plants as a mulch if you cut them down before they go to seed. Once they go to seed, they're actually using more from the soil than they're putting back in. So that's the only thing. But yes, it's a great way to hold a bed in place is just to let those weeds take it over. If they're spring weeds, and summer weeds a little different, but spring weeds, it's something I do.
Okay.
Great idea.
Yeah. Somebody told me, I think, one time that the vetches fix nitrogen in the soil.
That's correct.
So should I kind of leave them or?
Yeah, they're great. And the vetches are fine. But so are the other things, you know. There's a lot of different things coming up now. The little spiderworts with the little blue flowers that are coming up everywhere in yards. They're really good. The wild onions are coming up, and they're actually really good to eat. You know,
yeah, I got the chickweed and geranium.
That wild geranium,
yeah,
those are both great, and I pull them up and use them as mulch, or I leave them in place, or cut them off. Uh-huh. They're all great, and chickweed is particularly rich in nutrients, and it's actually good to eat too, believe it or not. That's why chickens love it, and a lot of people mix it in with their. It's traditional in the South to use chickweed and some of the others in the green gumbos that are so popular in spring as spring tonics because they're actually kind of good to eat. But, yeah, they make great soil.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, Bruce. Thanks for asking. Boy, it's a good question. Good question. You know, that is the interesting thing about weeds, and I try to tell people who are growing lawns, they panic because these spring weeds they really take off, and they take off before your grass is ready to grow. So we get these, you know, Tritus candida, we get the spiderworts and the other things, spiderwort if you like, spiderwort, whatever. The blue flowers on the stems that are coming up in people's yards right now, we get all these plants in there, the chickweeds, the clingtites, a bunch of different little things that are out there right now, the fumarias, if you know what a fumaria is, and they're all out there, and they beat the grass up because they what I mean to say is they come in before the grass starts growing because we have warm season grasses, and because we don't mow, these spring weeds get a real chance. You know, does it matter? Not really. Because the fact of the matter is they're probably adding nutrients to the soil. They're breaking up the soil in a way that the grasses probably don't. It's probably better, all in all, to have some of these spring weeds come in. So don't panic. If they begin to bother you, if you think there's too much of them, it is beside the point to use a herbicide, a chemical herbicide, because they're going to die out anyway. And if you spray them, they're probably going to go to seed before they die, and then you've... That doesn't help anything. You know they're going to die in a few weeks. All you've got to do is just go in and mow them. Just mow them. That's all that's going to happen. Because once the temperature gets warm, that's it. They're gone. It's all over and done with. So, you know, we panic too much about weeds sometimes. A tax man is sending me riddles here. Spikes 6 inches with blue tubular flowers, and he wants me to guess what they are. It depends on that sounds about like a Spanish bluebell, but it could be some other things too. It could be liriope. It could be some other things. I got to get a couple of more hits, tax man, before I can tell you about that one. And some other good things. Someone sent me a great picture. Dan's got a great picture of a container. I want to talk a little bit about that container because it's really kind of a smart container, and I'll tell you why. But we're going to be back here in just a minute. We got to take a break. Give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106. Let's talk about your garden. Let's talk about your azaleas. Let's talk about what it's going to take to to make this an easier year for gardening, an easier year for growing tomatoes, an easier year for growing vegetables and flowers. We need to talk, and I'm happy to do this too. We need to talk about what it's time to plant right now. Some things we've kind of lost our window for, but every month on the Gulf Coast is a great planting month. Let's talk about what you can plant this month. We're going to do that when we come back, so give us a call, 251-343-0106.
For the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of things to talk about. Taxman, you know, I need to Taxman, I got to get you to take some pictures so that you can sit in and I could tell you if it was a Spanish bluebell. It could well be. I'm not sure, but it sounds likely. There's some other things with spikes with blue flowers that come up this time of year. They're all kind of interesting. Jim has sent me a question about a yellow trumpet-like bloom that's growing up through his azaleas. Jim, I'm pretty sure that's not jessamine. If it's blooming this time of year. Is it blooming now, Jim? Just send me a text or you can call me. It's Carolina jessamine, which is pretty easy to control. If it's not blooming now, if it blooms later in the summer with yellow flowers, tubular, then it's probably cat's claw, which is a very terrible and aggressive vine. And I would get it out of there as soon as I could. It can be really bad. And you might have to cut the azalea back to do it, honestly. But cat's claw is a big, big thing. Big, big problem. If you've been by New Orleans and seen a vine covering warehouses, that's cat's claw. Kudzu's kind of overrated for many reasons, but it's got nothing on cat's claw. Cat's claw will eat it alive. So Macfadiana, that may be what it is. Eric, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Mr. Bill. I just wanted to know what type of variety of raspberries to grow in Mobile County.
Yeah. So, you know, there probably aren't many that grow well. Raspberries, there's a couple of reasons. Raspberries are very disease prone. They also don't like hot weather. And they don't like hot nights, and they don't like too much moisture, and they need it helps to have a long winter. Does this sound like Mobile? So yeah. Here's the trouble, but you know I'm experimenting with some varieties. I don't think they're going to do that well in Mobile, but one is called Carolyn.
Okay,
and it has had some good success in Mobile. One of the other problems with raspberries is that the diseases that blackberries and dewberries get very readily here are easily spread to raspberries. And and every yard in Mobile that I've ever been in has dewberries growing in it. So it's like everything is working against us. But okay. I think the variety is Caroline. I'll look it up again when we come to a break, and I'll correct that if I have remembered incorrectly. But Caroline is the one that I'm trying right now, and I think probably has the best chance of doing well in Mobile.
Okay. Yeah, I know it's a lot better up north, like especially out west. where that's, they do very well.
That's right. They can do very well out west, and they can do pretty well up north. Both of those situations, it's not only about the temperature, but it's about the dryness. Even in places out there that they think are of as wet, they're not like us. They don't have the high humidity, and so they don't get the diseases.
It's very low.
That
yeah, I worked out there for 11 years, and so I know a lot about the raspberries. I didn't know if you could grow them in the South.
Yeah, and they're not a traditional Southern thing. Now, I think in North Alabama, I think you stand a better chance, and some of those varieties. But it's worth playing with in Mobile. I don't think the vines will last a long time, but it's worth trying, and you might try that Caroline. Yeah. And Petals from the Past had it, I know, among others. Just Fruits and Exotics on the internet, I know, had that variety. It may be available locally. I kind of doubt it, though.
Okay. Well, I know you every other year you're supposed to cut the cane back.
That's right. And here you'd have to do it every year, essentially. We have such a long growing season that you probably want to do that every year to keep diseases from being a problem. I would say that the canes probably – the fields, your rows of raspberries probably need to be cleaned out and started over someplace else about every 3 years.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Yep. And because they'll probably die out by year three anyway. So about every 3 to 4 years, you'd probably need to move it somewhere else.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of this.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see if I can get it to grow here and experiment with it. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, you know, on the other hand, we do some things really, really well that the folks out west can't do it all. So,
I know. That's what's so great about everything.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Eric. Thank you. Good luck. Hey, if you grow it, tell me about it and tell me how it does. Okay.
I sure will, Mr. Finch.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for everything.
All right, Sharon. I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. I fed my citrus back. They're in pots. And the pot says, the directions for the citrus food says 3 tablespoons for a 10-inch pot.
Yes, ma'am.
So I fed them all, but one of them just looks to me like it needs more. The leaves are just not dark green. Some of them have a little yellow tinge. And I know when you get the new plants from the nursery, you can see the fertilizer. You know, they use a lot, and you can see it lying on the top of the soil. So I wonder if maybe I need more than 3 tablespoons for a 10-inch pot.
Well, it depends on what kind of fertilizer it is. So tell me what kind of fertilizer you're putting on it.
Well, it just says citrus fertilizer. You know, it's for citrus. But
yeah, and that's going to be fine.
I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, I would say for a 10-inch pot, that's probably going to be fine. Let me, when you have a problem that's very visible on a plant like that, when you're beginning to see yellow leaves, if there is a problem with that plant, it's probably not lack of fertilizer.
Okay.
It's probably something in the soil, so it may be that soil is staying too wet, or it may be that the roots are struggling. Or it may be just nothing. But it's probably not lack of fertilizer. And I would say in a 10-inch pot, that's a pretty small pot, I would say 3 tablespoons is probably good of the kind of citrus fertilizer that you buy from, you know, Home Depot, Walmart, those kind of places. So I think that's okay. I don't think it's a fertilizer deficiency. If you want to send me a picture of that citrus and we can look at it and think about it, I may be able to help.
It's not real a bad problem.
Yeah.
I just wondered if I need more fertilizer. But before I let you go, let me tell you one thing.
Yes, ma'am.
I used Weed and Feed on my lawn last year. I will never do it again. Later, I heard you say don't do that because it made my lawn so lush. I had to rake every time the man came to mow the lawn, and it just worked us to death. And finally, by the end of the season, it looked like maybe it had, you know, mostly been used up in the soil, so I hope this year will be better. So far it appears to be, but then the grass hadn't really started growing.
Yeah, so let me clarify for folks. Your lawn was lush because you used a fertilizer, and it was probably a very high potency fertilizer, and it can create a lawn that has that can get green up and grow really fast, which is a problem if you have to mow it. The weed part of it was not good for your lawn. It is, and it was ineffective against the weeds, I can guarantee you. So I say don't use weed and feed, because you never want to use a herbicide, which is the weed part, with a fertilizer, which is the feed part, at the same time. Mm-hmm. If you want to use them separately, well, then we can talk about it. But yes, you have brought up another problem, which is that fertilizer can make grass grow excessively. And you know what? It's not good for the grass to grow that excessively. It makes it more susceptible to insects and disease problems. And you have to mow it, and you're going to get behind on your mowing, and you're going to cut it too short for the height that it is, because you have to, because it's growing so fast. Yeah. And you stress the grass. So, yes, I recommend going very carefully with fertilizers. And for that reason, I'm telling you, don't add more fertilizer to your citrus.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
All right, bye, Sharon. Thank you. Have I got time, yeah. Charlie? Tara, I'm listening. What's up?
Hello?
How are you? Tara.
Oh, hey, good morning. Happy spring to all of us. Just something that... No big deal. I do have a question, but first of all, I want to say that I've been pulling some of those spring weeds that you've been talking about.
Yeah.
Because it's really easy to do just a few minutes here and a few minutes there.
Right.
You know, kind of even between other chores. And the areas where my dogs have their tiny paws and my big feet have pounded, I mean, even the bahia grass has died out, okay? It's bare dirt. In the middle of a nice grass pathway. So as I pull the weeds up, I've been throwing them down on that bare dirt. I mean, it at least makes it look better, you know,
right, a little bit. Yeah, that's good idea.
Is that a bad idea? I mean, I'm figuring if it's pounding that hard, it's going to kill that tough grass. That it's going to be pretty hard for even a weed to come up there.
That's right, and you're exactly right. And particularly with those spring weeds, they're going to decay pretty quickly. Your warm season grasses, whether it's St. Augustine or Centipede, they haven't started growing yet vigorously, but they will move into those little places where you put those spring weeds. You know, the great thing about spring weeds,
if they're high fertilizer to begin with, then that's going to at least can't hurt the soil, right?
Right. Well, they are providing fertilizer, but they also degenerate pretty quickly. They're pretty soft and watery, and so it allows them to break down very rapidly, and that means that soil's going to be ready in May for the grass to come up through it.
Well, my question now is something that I wish were as easy, because I've been battling this for years, and it was interesting that the gentleman that called a bit previously is trying to encourage a garden of it. Barry, is there an easier method and putting on some gloves and taking a pair of pliers and trying to yank the darn things up out over and over and over from your bedding areas or in between decaying mortar in a concrete, you know, patio or brick type area? Is there a better, easier way?
Yeah, so I don't know if pliers would be the best thing, but you know, there is another thing, and we better take a break, and I'm gonna come back and talk a little bit about it. I don't know that it'll be better. It has its own problems, but we'll talk about it when we come back. Is that okay?
Well, you can't use Roundup if you've got monkey grass and
that's right. I'm gonna talk
turf lilies and stuff growing right in it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes a bigger problem. So yeah, let's talk about it when we come back. We gotta take a break.
Thank you.
All right.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Playing Gardening. So, getting rid of weeds is a problem. And Tara raises the interesting problem that often weeds are growing with the plants that we like. Well, chemicals aren't that smart. We like to believe they are, but they're not. We haven't really developed smart chemicals. They can't distinguish from one plant to another very well, and particularly when it gets into the flower beds and things like that. So it's very hard to use a chemical herbicide in a flower bed for that reason, because you're basically going to end up killing everything in the flower bed, or at least weakening most of it, and probably not doing an effective job of killing the plant that you wanted to kill. So there's a thing called weeding, and Tara's got several ways of doing it. She's got a pair of pliers that allows her to handle it. There are several tools that are out there that are designed for pulling trees and vines that are actually quite good. They are they're on a pole. They give you some leverage. They have little scissor, not a scissor, but a clamp like thing that grabs the stem and pulls, and it makes it easier to pull out. There's a number of those out there that you can get, and it can make things a lot easier if you're having to pull a lot of trees. And you know, one of the worst weeds that we have in our yards here along the Gulf Coast are trees, because they grow so fast. It can be really annoying. There's nothing more annoying than hackberry stems and pecan stems coming up everywhere, and they'll do it. And it's just, and they have really, pecans particularly have those really deep roots. Oh, man, what a pain. So it helps to have a tool with a little bit of leverage. I don't have one. And every now and then I think, you know, I ought to get one, because they can work. And maybe we need to design one that is even more effective. But handled tools that have a kind of jaws on them that clamp around the stem, and you lever them and you pull things out of the ground, that can be very useful. In a concrete area, if you don't want to use herbicides, one of the things you can do is use a torch, and they actually make torches that actually are good at killing some young weeds. The heat will kill those young weeds. That's another way of doing it. So there are a couple of things like that that you can do. If there are some very specific ways to use Roundup so that it is safe and doesn't get all over everything and doesn't hurt your plants, doesn't hurt the soil, should not create any problems for you or your children. There's some ways to do that. If you've got some questions about how to do that, let's talk about it, and we will this morning. Jim, thank you for holding on. I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. I'm sitting down here in Irvington, not too far from these Satsuma orchards that you were referencing earlier. But I've got this vine, and based on your response to my earlier text, I think it is the Carolina jessamine. And it's an old home place down here. And the vines, I think I planted one as a kind of as a visual break on the fence at the driveway.
Yeah.
And it has migrated over to a row of azaleas that line the old driveway for the old home place. And it looks like it's going to take over the whole row if I don't get a handle on it. And I was just wondering, maybe cutting back those few azaleas to where I can get at the vine. But I have noticed where I have tried to remove the vine,
shoots will
come up out of the ground. And just wondering, any ideas would be appreciated.
Well, Jim, to be double sure, let's send me a picture and we'll figure out what it is. You know, the one thing about Carolina jasmine is that it usually doesn't. If it were cat's claw, it would grow so thick that it would smother the azalea. The one neat thing about Carolina jasmine is that it doesn't grow quite as thick, and so it may not smother the azalea, and it may be kind of a cute little thing to have little tufts of Carolina jasmine coming out of the azaleas every now and then. If it's thick enough to smother the azalea, then it becomes a problem. Yes. So here's what happens. When you cut a vine like that, if you really want to get rid of it, and you really want to eradicate it, take a paintbrush or something with a very narrow spray cone that has a little hood on it, but paintbrushes work really well, and take a little bit of Roundup and paint it on the surface. You can either paint it on the surface of the vine when you cut it, or you can paint it on that new growth when it emerges, and that can be very effective.
You know, and I'll be honest with you, Bill. I had some of the same problem at my house up off of Rabbit Creek Drive, and I've done that. And for the larger vines, I did it back in the fall, and I did see some kill back. But I also noticed that if I missed one shoot coming out of the ground, it's like, well, oh great, I've got more room now. You know, it makes me think, and plus battling into an old azalea in both cases with getting stuck and pricked and prodded by trying to work my way into the azalea bushes to find where these vines originate.
It's hard. And that's why I say, you know, after about every 15 years, it's good to cut it down and get those vines where you can see them.
I think that's where I'm headed with these. Yeah, I just wanted and the topical, the spot on, you know, almost like a foam paintbrush with pure, you know, 40% glyphosate is what I had done to the larger vines, and I was hoping you were going to give me some kind of easy fix.
Well, here's another
question. I'll send you a picture maybe by next week. You're running short today. But is this Carolina jasmine the same, more or less the same thing that I'll see in the country after a clear cut? And then all of a sudden you start seeing yellow shoots and yellow vines out in the middle of nowhere.
If it's blooming in the middle of, if it's blooming in February, March.
Right.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. That's when these are blooming. And then, but they'll, I don't know if they'll bloom multiple times, but this is, I mean, they put out beautiful blooms. It's a beautiful specimen on a fence row. But then it's found its way to the azaleas.
Well, and you know, I don't think so. You know, it sometimes it probably isn't going to hurt the azaleas quite like some other vines would, because it doesn't get quite as thick. So I wouldn't stress about it as much. I think just cutting it back every now and then would keep it from becoming a canopy problem.
Sure.
If all you get is a few little, it's going to be, the vines are, if you're any distance from the bush, you're not going to be able to distinguish the leaves of the jessamine from the leaves of the azalea.
No, you can't. You're right.
And then the great thing is that you get these two seasons of bloom. So you get the jasmine mixed in with the azalea and our two seasons of blooms, and it could be really neat. I don't think I could be proven wrong, but I don't think the Carolina jasmine is going to threaten the azalea in the same way some really, really aggressive vines would, like cat's claw. So I would say just cutting them back every now and then and saying, you know, you're part of my yard too. I can live with you. We're okay.
I got you.
I think that
I'm down here in a live oak paradise down here, and I can attest to the fact that I've got more leaves now. I told somebody I've got my second fall down here.
That's
the leaves are falling like snow down here.
That's right. Well, this is for many of us. This is our spring. Is our first fall. It is the primary leaf season along the Gulf Coast, and it's just how our lives are different. We're the world upside down, if you like, or the rest of the world is upside down from us, which is the way I tend to look at it. And so we have spring is a natural leaf fall season, and we get a big leaf fall, no question.
Hey, listen, I'll let you go, but I have come to appreciate, and I used to think until I met folks from other areas of the country and out west, and they're like, man, the green is so green down here. And I look around now, and there must be 10 different shades of green.
That's right. It is absolutely the incredible thing about spring. I love those spring greens. They're incredible.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Bill. I appreciate your time.
All right, Jim, good to hear from you. So it's an interesting thing. Sometimes, you know, we require, our minds want to require a degree of purity about things. Oh, this plant can only be this place, and it can't be over here, and plants can't mix. They can't get mixed up together. I don't know whether that's part of our old Southern culture or not. But here's the thing. It can happen, and it's something we can live with. Some weeds we can't, and we can talk about those. But all right, give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, lots of things to go through here before we run out of time. Listen, pay attention very carefully. Somebody was asking me about how much cottonseed meal to apply to a very mature Satsuma. So, you know, you want about a – that's – the quick answer is somewhere between a quarter and a third of a bag of cottonseed meal, assuming you have a 40-pound bag. And that needs to be spread out over a very large area. Don't clump it up against the trunk. It won't be any good for the Satsuma, and it won't be any good for you either because it's going to smell. Listen, you spread it out, and then if you want to, this is a good time to come and put leaves back on trees. I tell you that that Satsuma is like bare soil, and they do like bare soil in winter. There's some benefits to that. No mulch, no nothing. Just keep it bare. But this time of year, as it's heating up, it's a good time to put the mulch on. The mulch will deteriorate. It'll be bare soil by next winter. Put your cottonseed meal on, somewhere between 10, 15 pounds of cottonseed meal is about right per 1,000 square feet. That's about right. That's about right, okay? And spread it out as far around that drip line. This is a big Satsuma now. We're talking about a big Satsuma. Spread it out around that drip line. Put some leaves around it. I'd say about a quarter bag. Big tree. Put the leaves around it. And then, you know, do you need to do that every year? Probably not. Given that it's cottonseed meal, particularly if you're putting some leaves around it as mulch, it'll probably be fine. You can probably skip a year, but about a quarter. But let's make it a quarter bag. It should be plenty of nitrogen. Maybe you could put a third of a bag on there, but I think that's getting to be almost too much. So how's that? A pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet is what we generally look at. A pound and a half of regular fertilizer, but cottonseed meal, you don't need as much. For several simple reasons. Johnny sent me a great picture of blueberries and asking why the blueberries here are very different than the ones in Alaska. You know, the blueberries here, Johnny, it's very interesting. We have so many different kinds of blueberries in the South and in Alabama, and I should count them all up. But in that blueberry and gay lusatia group, Vaccinium and gay lusatia, we got probably something like 25 different varieties, 25, 30. This is a bunch of them, maybe more. About 30 is probably right in Alabama. And they all have different, they all have very different leaves. They're all very different. If I take you to different places, you'd see how different they are. And sometimes they seem covered up with leaves, and sometimes with Elliott's blueberry, they don't seem covered up, and sometimes they're just different in different places. So it's hard to tell. Whereas the ones they have, I don't know what they've got in Alaska. I haven't explored that. But I'm sure we've got some that have a lot of different leaves. But there are a lot of that are covered with leaves. So fun thing to think about. I'll think about what it is you're seeing and why you see it differently. It's very good. Dan has got a great picture of a container that he has. And one of the things I like about it, it's a container that was used to feed cows. It's their molasses licks that came in. It's got – Dan, did you put those holes in the side? The great thing about that container is that the holes are not just in the bottoms. They're on the sides. And I find, particularly for plants that like to be well drained, having holes in the side down towards the lower part can really help sometimes. It doesn't solve all the problems of containers, but it helps to have that. They don't get clogged up as readily. And that's good to have those little holes on the sides. That's one of the reasons why I like that a lot. Greg has sent me a lot of pictures of his yard. They're really great looking. He's got a lot going on. And a lot of things. His calistamen is blooming just beautifully. Really beautiful yard. And a lot of, Greg, it's always good to hear from you. Listen, if you get a chance, go to our Flickr site and look at Greg's garden. It's very nice. The one thing I would say is, you know, those beds are going to heat up fast. That's really good. They're going to dry out fast. That's also good, particularly this time of year. Greg, in the area between those beds, you're perfectly positioned just to go ahead and start filling those up with leaves so that the roots of your plants can grow into it. You double the space. You don't compact the soil as well. You're creating your soil for next year. So fill those. And you may already be going to do this. But between those big stacked beds that you've got, those big raised beds, fill the area between them with leaves. Just fill them with leaves. And next year you may not need to stack them quite so high, but that's good. That's good. Got a question. I have two orange trees in a 2-gallon pot now with small oranges on them. Will it hurt if I put them in the ground now? No, put them in the ground right now. Don't you wait. There's no need to wait on that. Just go ahead and put those things in the ground. I will say, when you... If the plants are small, and it sounds like they are, you want them to abort those small green oranges. You don't want them to hold on to those oranges, whether they're in the pot or whether they're in the ground, because it will stress the tree badly. So if they don't drop those fruits in another 2 or 3 weeks, and they probably will, but if they don't, pick those fruits off so that it doesn't stress the tree. It needs young trees don't need to be having fruits. It's a very exhausting thing. It can really stress the tree for a long time, and that's a big problem. Carol in Bay Minette is saying the silver lining is raking leaf drop is free mulch. I even collect those put out by my neighbors. Amen, Carol. We all do that. And she's also points out that the weeds that come up where you've put your leaves are much easier to pull, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But Carol, a great observation there. And Carol raises a good question. Some plants you don't want to stack those leaves right next to the stems, particularly trees. And so when we get volcano mulch right around the trees, that's not a good thing. Smaller plants that have adventitious roots that can come out like azaleas, it probably doesn't matter as much. With tomatoes, it probably doesn't matter as much, though I try not to stack them too close to the tomatoes, because there is a possibility that they can get real wet, and sometimes you get southern mold and other things. Southern blight and other problems. But, just a little bit of space between the collars of your plants in some cases. I have and the leaves that you're putting on. And call us back next week and we can talk a little bit more in detail about what that means and how to do it. I have a picture that someone has sent me let's see, where is this from, if I can figure this out. Well, it's an 802 number. It's a waste of time to pluck these from my grass. What I have a picture of is wild bluegrass, annual bluegrass, one of the annual bluegrasses. It is not Kentucky bluegrass. It's related. It's not going to be pretty in your yard like Kentucky bluegrass is in the Kentucky areas. Your horses aren't going to eat a lot of it because it's just going to be a spring weed. It's a typical spring weed, this little bluegrass. It comes up. You know what? Ignore it. Mow it if you like. It's not going to compete with your grass because it's fixing to die out. Ooh, lots of questions for spring coming up. Hey, folks, give me a call next week. Let's talk about your garden once again. We'll see you then.
How the weather in the country? How the weather down south? How the weather in the Delta? How the food tastes in your mouth?
You're listening to the newest, boldest, freshest station in Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Talk radio now in crystal clear digital FM stereo. 8 out of 10 radio users listen to FM, so an advertising campaign for your business on FM Talk 106.5 will reach the number of qualified adults it'll take to increase your business. Our listeners are paying attention to what we're saying, not just to song after song. This is Bill Roth, Director of Sales, and I'd be happy to talk to you about how we can successfully advertise your business. This is a great economy, and by giving me a call at 251-344-1065, extension 15, we'll discuss how to promote your business efficiently and economically. Our listeners should be your customers. Let's talk about how to make that happen. The number again is 251-344-1065, extension 15. We're FM Talk 106.5. Let us go to work for you.